Welcome back to Arts About.
The show about art that's a work of art in itself.
Oh, that
it's
sounds a little different.
I've said that,
it's a bit of a tongue twister, isn't it? We think John's really sort of lazy, but actually he's quite good at things.
He's
like
very
that.
Good at that, John.
Of course, you're listening to Arts About, which is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. I'm here, Sally Bailiw, and with the provocative Mark Stewart. John Baird, as you may have realised, is AWOL.
Mount Beauty.
Ah, is that where he is? Mm. Okay.
Looking up to horses.
Okay. Well, we're going to give him a ring a little bit later.
Good.
And see what he's up to. And, of course, our technical producer, Brody Guzet, is smoothing the way for us as always. What are you going to talk to us about today, Mark?
I'm going to talk about the exhibition Every Brilliant Eye again,
mm-hmm.
That Christopher Allen has reviewed in the Weekend Australian, and very good review.
And where's that on at?
It's on at Fed Square.
Yep.
And also the Turner Valdoste, which is John's fetish painting that he's going to learn something about that he never knew.
Oh, my goodness. So even when John's not here, he has to defend himself.
Exactly.
Fantastic. I look forward to that. Hey, did you hear recently about the Tom Roberts painting that they just found?
Yes, I did.
It's an incredible story, isn't it? Mm. What's it called? It's called...
Rejection.
Rejected. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. They said it's not really in his style. That it wasn't the sort of painting that he was famous for.
No.
This is why they thought it wasn't really him. But then it was signed Tom Roberts. So.
It was. And it had some address, I think, that he had lived in that
in
was
London.
On the back. And
yeah.
And I also did hear, actually, I did read something too, that there had been sketches found of his work too that perhaps hinted at that particular painting. Anyway, if you're interested in seeing it, it's actually displayed at the moment. It's on at the Philip Bacon Galleries in Fortitude Valley. I'm assuming that's in Queensland until September. Oh, actually, it's probably only there for another couple of days. So hopefully it'll come somewhere soon where we might get a chance to see it. We had a fabulous weekend, didn't we, Mark? Over the last couple of last week, we all went up to Kyneton and saw the fabulous Cameron Robbins exhibition, remote drawings
in the Kyneton Stockhouse.
In the stock room, yeah, that was really the stock room, which was really amazing. And caught up with him, so I've got a little video, perhaps, which I'll post, I think, on Facebook of his amazing machine up there. And we should remind people that he's got an exhibition coming up at Mars in the next few weeks. So hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to him about that, or at least show some of the work that's on there. This week it's all about The Fringe, the annual festival celebrating the cutting edge and challenging view of the performing arts, film and furniture in Australia. And we're going to be talking to two artists about their shows that are about to hit the floorboards. Leon Huxtable with his show Talk Show With Myself that seeks to give voice to more than 75,000 Australians that live with inflammatory bowel disease. And also Alice Tovey and Ned Dixon are performing their piece called Mansplaining, which takes audiences on a journey of masculinity, misogyny and manitude. They're both Fringe shows, so we're going to be talking to them a little later. So while we first of all get Leon on the phone, here's a track called Are You Drinking With Me, Jesus? By Yellow Biafra. Make of it what you will. Outing oneself in any way can be one of the most cathartic and liberating things to do. And these days our entire community is demonstrating how doing so can in so many ways alleviate the suffering of outsiders. The National Disability Scheme is reflecting what the arts have known forever, that disability in one kind or another is being normalised in the mainstream, and as well as providing solidarity in its ranks, is helping make everyone aware we're part of a wider community that includes difference in it. Disability takes many forms, and our guest today, Leon Huxtable, is part of the fabulous Fringe Festival, bringing us a slice of his world that includes living with Crohn's disease in a show called Talk Show With Myself that follows Leon's life through the silly things that can happen when you live with a chronic illness. He's on the line with me this morning. Good morning, Leon, and welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sarah. Thank you so much for having me on Arts About.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Leon, you used to be a high school drama and English teacher, so it's probably no surprise that you might see theatre as a way to deal with your disease. Do you think your students would be surprised, or would this be exactly what they would have expected of you?
That's a good question. Look, I think they would expect it of me, because when I was teaching, I I focused a lot on doing the whole theatre and education thing and taking on some pretty serious topics, including marriage equality, but also the things that I'm passionate about, which is, you know, anti-bullying plays and the environment, things like that. But I think they would understand it. And I also did two presentations when I was at the school, one to the assembly about Crohn's disease around the time of Genes for Genes Day, and also to the Year 12 biology class, kind of giving them another case study. So I don't think they'd be surprised that I'm doing something Crohn's related. They might be surprised that I'm kind of dusting off the cobwebs and getting back on stage, though.
Well, first of all, can you tell us what is Crohn's disease?
Oh, I can. It is it's an inflammatory bowel disease, or an IBD. It's caused by your immune system basically kind of taking revenge on different parts of your body. It can affect any part of the gastrointestinal tract, which is where it differs from colitis. Colitis primarily only affects the colon. So it's an autoimmune disease that causes inflammation, and through that inflammation there are a whole bunch of different symptoms and side effects that can occur. And the kind of typical medication route that people go down is that immune system blockers and things like that, which again leads to a whole bunch more of side effects and issues that arise from having a lower immune system.
And you've made a comedy out of this.
I have, yeah. When you put it like that, it sounds like maybe I shouldn't have. No, I have, because I've found that, you know, in all my time going to doctor's offices and pharmacies and hospitals and talking to people about it and just sometimes stepping back and seeing a situation that's horrible in the moment, it's usually quite funny afterwards. And I've always found that the best way for me to handle the disease is to talk about it. I've been pretty lucky that it's not too serious for me. I'm pretty mild. I get to go to my full-time job 9 to 5 and have my weekends and all those things. Like, I have a pretty normal, in quotation marks, life. So I always find, I try to talk about it. I try to give a voice to it, because I know that a lot of people are afraid to talk about it, because obviously toilet talk is quite taboo for most society, which is kind of why I've gotten this tagline for my show where I want to reclaim toilet humour and turn it into something good.
So tell us a little bit about the show. What is it?
So, funnily enough, I was sitting at the comedy festival this year and was with a friend, and you know what happens when you go to those kind of things. You stand there and you go, oh, I reckon I could probably give it a go. And it all started from there.
Some of us do that, not everybody, Leon.
Yeah, and, sometimes I think if you ask people if that was a good idea that they've gone down, they might say, I don't know if it's a great idea. I'm still not sure if it's a great idea. I'm going to find out. It's basically it's pretty classic in terms of stand-up comedy style. The reason I call it talk show with myself is that I maintain that most stand-up comedy is essentially a talk show with yourself, where you've got to keep yourself entertained, which then entertains the audience. Mm-hmm. And I think I've called it talk show because I guess there are times where I'm maybe delving into topics that are taboo or serious or that, always trying to paint a lighter picture. It definitely talks about my Crohn's disease. It talks about different situations that have happened to me, especially at work. When you're trying to work with Crohn's, it's always quite interesting. And trying to, you know, go out and do things like going to see Cirque du Soleil and seeing what happens when you have to sit through a 3-hour show. But also, you know, the interesting line that I'm having to walk is I'm having to think about, I don't want to seclude part of my audience by talking about Crohn's disease all the time, because not all of them, or possibly not any of them, are going to have Crohn's disease or colitis or IBD. So I've also got to walk that line of talking about things that everyone can relate to at the same time as trying to bring as much of the IBD-related stuff into the comedy to try and bring awareness to it as well.
Because I believe that you actually do work with the Crohn's and Colitis Australia. Are you an ambassador for them, or how are you involved with them? Did they help you with your show financially in any way?
Yeah, so it's quite interesting. So I, funnily enough, today, 4 years ago, I got the old Facebook reminder that 4 years ago today was the first time that I had an article in the Crohn's Colitis magazine. Excuse me. And that was because 4 years ago I decided to shave my head and my beard. to try and raise some money for Crohn's Colitis Australia. And luckily, a friend of mine jumped on board with me, who's the same friend that I guess kind of persuaded me to do a comedy show.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up raising $4,000, or just over $4,000 for Crohn's Colitis, which was great and amazing. And they were very supportive the whole time. Excuse me. So then when it came to when I was teaching, I stayed in contact with them. And then when it came to the show, I kind of thought, well, I've got to get in contact with them again and see what we can do and see how we can work together. So there's been no there's no financial support coming from either side, so I'm not giving any of my proceeds to them, and they're not giving me any financial support. But what we've kind of done is, I guess, do some kind of cross-promotion work. You know, I tag them in my posts and I talk about them. They have given me another article in the magazine that's coming out quite soon. I'm sorry about the coughing. I think
that's all right. You've got a glass of water there?
In that winter sickness. So it's been quite interesting that we've been working together in that way. So, yeah, they've got an article in the magazine for me. They were extremely kind to me and put, you know, put a post for it on Facebook, which had really good reactions from people, had kind of the reaction that I'm looking for, which was people being, you know, very positive about it all and being very happy that someone's doing something like this.
Yeah.
But that's kind of as far as we've gone this time. So
well, it's a great climate for that sort of thing. As I mentioned earlier on, you know, the National Disability Insurance Scheme is having an impact on the kind of conversations that are out there in cultural life, really, which is, you know, around all sorts of disabilities. And we're actually beginning to realise that, you know, well, we're not beginning to realise, the arts have always known that kind of inclusion in the conversation is a great thing, and bringing people together and actually celebrating difference, because we all are, none of us are perfect, we've all got something wrong with us. And there have been some remarkable arts in the past that have actually focused around that. And one of the things, I mean, there's a distinction between disability art and disability in the arts, because you know, one being about disability and the other inclusive. But yours is actually both of those things, isn't it?
Yeah. It's I guess kind of trying to cross those two lines. I guess by doing a show about it, it's on that one section that you were talking about that's looking at disability art. And then I guess by being someone with a chronic illness / disability myself, and having other people, you know, hopefully coming and seeing it that are I guess in that world as well, yeah, it becomes an accessibility show and a show that has access and is about access in a way. So yeah, but I guess the thing is, you know, I in a way I didn't necessarily set out with a goal that I was going to, you know, get out there and be a voice for Crohn's and do stuff for chronic illnesses and accessibility and things like that. But it pretty easily turned into that, because I thought, well, what am I going to talk about for 45 minutes or an hour? And I thought, well, what do I know best? I know my Crohn's. Like, it is part of my life. It's a big defining factor for me. It just kind of, I guess, turned into that me, and has now become what it is, which I'm very happy with the way that it's going, and I'm very happy with the conversations that I'm having with people. And I'm excited to, yeah, kind of see what it turns into. So I did also, as I've mentioned, you know, there's the work that happened with Crohn's and Colitis Australia, but I ended up getting in contact with this website called Crusade for Crohn's .org.
So, Leon, who was Crohn?
What was that, sorry?
Who was Crohn?
That is a great question, and I really wish I had the answer for you.
Yeah, I wonder if perhaps he or she was the person who discovered or who named the disease and
came across it,
or perhaps had it for the first time and recognised it. Hey, yeah, it sounds like a great show. It's terrific to make people laugh about something that's so terribly serious. It's your show is on at, it's called Talk Show With Myself, and it's on at the Hare Hole, which is, where's that, Leon?
So it's on Johnson Street in Fitzroy. It's the Hares and Hyena Bookshop, which is an LGBTQI plus focused bookshop,
mm-hmm.
And they kind of turned it into, you know, a nice little theatre. I think it seats like 75 people, but yeah, so it's just in Fitzroy. They're very accessible in terms of bus and stuff. It's an accessible venue for anyone that does, you know, have any kind of disability, or that it's extremely accessible, and they do a lot of work there themselves with artists, you know, suffering with disabilities and with illnesses. So it really seems like the perfect fit, and it's, I guess, the perfect fit as well, because Melbourne Fringe has been, again, so welcoming and so accepting and so helpful with everything as well. It's such a great time to put it on, and it's such a great group of people to work with.
Yeah, fabulous. Tell us the dates.
It's on the 25th and the 26th of September. There's a 7 p.m. show on the 25th, and there's a 7 p.m. and a 9 p.m. show on the 26th.
We will, of course, put links to it on our Facebook page, and our listeners can go to the Fringe website and search Talk Show With Myself to find it as well. It's a great pleasure talking to you today. Thanks so much, Leon, and good luck with the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you very much.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
And we're doing it by remote this morning, aren't we, John?
Well, we're doing it by telephone.
Yeah, okay.
Hello, John.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, John. How is it? How's it
now,
up
listen,
in
Melbourne? I can hardly hear either of you, so what I'm going to do is just talk about what I'm going to talk about.
No, that's not possible, John.
It's not possible?
No. I've got something to tell you. So I've got some terrible news.
Well, I won't be able to hear you because I can't hear anything on the other end of the phone.
Okay. Well, we'll just talk just about talk. Him later. Yeah, you just talk.
What was that?
You just talk.
All right. Now, we were all up in Clinton last weekend, and we saw the Robbins show up there, and that was terrific. And then we all had a great time. But then Amanda and I headed off, and we've come up to the Kiwa Valley. And as I was driving in here, you go over a place called Coral Bank on the way up to Kiwa Valley, and as you do, you get a view of the Alpine region up here, Mount Bogong and Fainter and Featherback and Bulls Creek and all those fabulous places. And it's the first time up the valley that you get a really clear view of them. It was a beautiful sunny day, and they're covered in snow.
Mm. Oh!
And it was absolutely fabulous. But as usual, as I come over that gap there, I always think of Danilo Vasilyev, a Russian painter. I saw a painting that he made of Mount Bogong when I was about 16 years old, and it had not a deep effect on me, but I always really loved the painting. I've never seen it again, and I'm not sure I can remember where I saw it. But Vasilyev was an interesting guy. He was Russian. He was born just in time to be of fighting age during the Russian Revolution and the First World War. Had a terrible time doing that and fled Russia. But he went from Russia, he took off and went down to China via various other places. He had quite a long trip down there. And met someone, married her, and then they headed off and ended up in Australia in the late 1920s, around 1930. And he worked as a cane cutter up in Queensland, and then he started to paint in Makarrankar, of all places. And he got very interested in painting, and then went back to England, had some successful shows in England, came back to Australia, and he was kind of, he had that Russian thing going, which is he was pretty well pissed off with everything, and started painting very social realist paintings around Fitzroy in Melbourne. And a lot of people see him as the father of the Angry Penguin group.
Oh, really?
In fact, he ended up spending a lot of time up in Heidi, which is where he died, actually. He died in the house at Heidi. Had a heart attack there one afternoon. But he's not really kind of looked at a lot. But if you're looking at paintings like Albert Tucker's series, you know, The Image of Modern Evil,
mm-hmm.
and Arthur Boyd's paintings from around Murrumbina, you know, the sort of apocalypse as viewed from Murrumbina paintings, and Cripples in the Backstreet of Fitzroy after the war, all thing. A lot of that comes from Vasiliev, who had a great tradition of where he spent his life looking at Russian peasant drawing and a Russian tradition of painting. He's a very interesting man. Mm. And every time I go over that gap at Coral Bank, I just think to myself, Vasiliev.
Okay, that's... I don't know that's one. Really yes, close. I know. Well, don't worry. They're going to have to do something about this. That was great. Thanks, John. We'll hopefully have it repaired sometime in the near future. But, of course, always an interesting story and a glimpse of a painter that we probably haven't thought about for a while.
Yes, and you should get back here.
Yeah.
Okay,
cheerio.
Bye.
The number of words in the English language has grown from about 50,000 in Old English to more than a million today. We're inundated with daily additions, which, articulate as it is, can always be proven to need refinement. New words, combining old ones, articulate nuances and sometimes encapsulate meaning so succinctly that we cannot imagine having lived with them all of our lives. Mansplaining, in case you didn't know, it's a new word to describe the act of explaining without regard to the fact that the explainee knows more than the explainer, often done by a man to a woman. It's a situation many of us are familiar with and exasperated by, and our next guest, Alice Tovey, has created a show about it. And she's on the phone with us today. Good morning, Alice. Thanks for coming on Arts About.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Great to hear, talk to you. Alice,
likewise.
How did we ever live without this word?
I have no idea, because I'm sure, as you're well aware, it happens so often, and quite often I don't think men realise that they're doing it, so I think it's a great way to call men out on their behaviour.
Absolutely. I believe it was a sellout at the comedy festival, Mansplaining. You've obviously touched a nerve on your journey through masculinity, misogyny and the millennial man. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, like you said, mansplaining is that phenomenon when men just assume that women don't know things about things and feel the need to explain things. And particularly last year, I found with like the rise of Donald Trump and everything that was happening in Australian politics, it was becoming more and more prevalent. So I just thought, we need some silly songs about this, and that's where I stepped in.
Terrific. Well, I've seen you described as an operatic rock goddess. Who wouldn't want to be?
Sweet.
Who wouldn't want to be called that?
It was pretty overwhelming. I think I called my grandma with that one and told her about it.
Was she impressed?
Oh, yeah. Grandma's great. Loves all my shows, which is awesome because I say some super rude words. She still talks to me. That's all I want.
Well, that's pretty good. Yes, I did actually want to, if I could have played a little bit of one of your pieces on the show. But as you pointed out to me, there were quite a few words and Brendan, the station manager, wouldn't let me put it on.
Yes.
So, Alice, you're part of a duo. You and Ned Dixon have partnered up before. Tell us about that arrangement.
Putting it quite frankly, Ned, he's a piano genius. I am so lucky to have Ned. Nothing would get done without him. We both met back at the Conservatorium of Music in Melbourne. We worked together doing, what was it called, Tres Miserables. We did all of Les Mis with three people in an hour. And from there we realised that we worked really well together, we collaborate well, and we started writing our own solo work.
Fantastic. And this is the third, I think, of your productions, isn't it?
Yes, third in 2 years. We're ageing terribly.
Oh, my goodness. You can't possibly be ageing terribly. You two are only in your 20s, aren't you?
Yeah, we're babies. Cabaret babies.
Cabaret babies. So tell us, what were the other productions called, in case some of our listeners have perhaps heard them?
Sure. So our first show was called Malice. And our second show was done with a big rock band called The Apostles, and it was called Personal Messiah.
Now, another review that I've read of yours has said that the fans of Tom Lehrer or Tim Minchin will be right at home here. Are those two sort of have you followed their careers? Are both of those of interest to you, those performers?
Oh, absolutely. I grew up listening to a lot of Tom Lehrer and Tim Minchin and Tripod, and yeah, it brought a bit of a comedy nerd tear to my eye when I got that review. It was incredibly overwhelming, and yeah, I'm very grateful to the reviewer who said that.
Yeah, well, they've all said some rather spectacular things about you. Tell me, where is this show?
The show is at the North Melbourne Town Hall in Queensbury Street in the Underground Bar, which is an amazing cabaret venue. It's very, very cool.
So that means that you're part of the Fringe Hub, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Which means that you're part of the curated program. So Fringe have looked at your show and said, oh, yes, we want her, thanks.
The Fringe is so good. I love working with the Fringe. Yeah. I work with them 100 times more because they just put on great seasons, and yeah, they often book us, which is very cool.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have you any idea how many shows there are actually as part of Fringe this year?
Oh, it's upwards of hundreds, and
well, yes, I know that it's been cool in the 300s before, so it's, and I just think it's growing, isn't it?
Absolutely, and there's heaps of female performers this year. I think the women outnumber the men, which makes me very, very happy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's bound to happen eventually, of course. So, Mansplaining, I think it's been a winner of the Best Emerging Artist at the Adelaide Fringe. Is that correct?
Malice was.
Malice.
Was, again, another career highlight. It was, yeah, I was just sitting on the couch in my tracksuit that day and they gave me the ring and, yeah, we won. It was great.
Yeah, that's exciting. So fingers crossed for this one as well. Tell us the dates, Alice.
So we're running from the 23rd of September to the 30th, and there's no show on Monday, so don't come on a Monday, but come any other day and I'll be there.
Terrific. We'll put a link on our Facebook page, but for our listeners, if you go to the Fringe website and Google or search for Mansplaining, I'm sure it'll come up. Thanks for talking to us today. It's been a great pleasure. Good luck with the show. It sounds like a lot of fun. I wish we could be playing a little bit of it on the air today.
Well, thank you so much, Sally.
See you later, Alice. Bye. So now it's time for a little bit of That's Amazing, I Never Knew That, Mark.
Yes.
You're going to have a dig at John, aren't you?
No, I'm not digging at John. Oh, I'm just okay. Because he speaks so often about the Valdosta of Turner, I decided to look it up. And in fact, it is no longer called the Valdosta. It has been retitled The Falls of Schaffhausen.
Schaffhausen?
S-C-H-A-F-F, Schaffhausen.
Oh.
Which are in Switzerland. And apparently Turner regularly sent incomplete canvases to the Royal Academy and then finished the pictures in the last minute frenzy on varnishing day, which is what they used to have in the salons. You'd have a day where you'd varnish your painting and finish mm-hmm. it off. So Australia bought the painting in 1973. And it was then called the Valdosta, but they
which means is that Eastern Valley or what does Valdosta mean?
That is the it's a, just over the border from France.
Oh, it's a place.
It's a place.
Specific place.
Yeah, it's in Italy. It's in the Piedmont Valley, in Italy, and they thought that was where the painting was made.
Oh,
but in fact, it's
not even there.
It's not there. They think now that it was the Falls of Schaffhausen, which is in Switzerland.
Oh.
Okay, so John's been talking about this painting all the time, and it's not even no longer
it's
even
not
called.
John's fault, though. I'm going to stick up for John here and say it's actually not his fault. So how have you found this out?
Well, I looked it up, of course, and I was just fascinated because he was so so attached to this painting.
Yes, he does love that painting, doesn't he?
And it's been renamed something else. Ah. So John, sorry about that. Anyway.
Has it been renamed? Like, has it got a new plaque?
I haven't. It's not up at the moment.
Oh, isn't
so
it?
It's. But it's puts in brackets the Falls of Schaffhausen when you look it up. So that's why they explained it. I thought that was very interesting. My good friend Christopher Allen, who I've never met.
The writer,
the critic,
yes.
Critic who is right up there with Robert Hughes, criticised. Well, was speaking about the Every Brilliant Eye exhibition, which is on the third floor at Fed Square. Opposite the Brave New World exhibition, which you should all see.
What's it called? Every Brilliant Eye.
Every Brilliant Eye. It's not worth seeing. Although, you know, as he said, I quote, one may wonder on first venturing into the NGV's retrospective of the art of the 90s in Australia, whether that decade was really as miserable and as disoriented as the exhibition makes it appear.
Oh.
So.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what is it a collection of contemporary artists of the 90s?
Artists of the 90s, and it's part of their permanent collection, which is, you know, they must have so much stuff.
They must have so much stuff. So are they from Melbourne or are they Australian or what?
Australian artists.
Right.
And I've spoken about it before, and what for me was a very dry, unhappy collection of insignificant art stuck in its time, all about politics and AIDS and communism, the Gulf War, the internet, sexual identity, etc., comes back to the point I often speak about, which is that art should not be political because it just stays in its time, and so it's stuck in that time, and it for me the whole reason for art is the mystery behind it, not the political sense. But obviously I'm going against the grain here.
Yeah.
But I was happy to read Christopher Allen saying
yes, okay.
that is there all there was in the art of the 90s, or is it simply a story put together by curators and reflecting the buying decisions of contemporary art creators in the 90s as all the work is taken from the permanent collection? And he's saying the 90s was a time when contemporary creators began increasingly to dominate purchases, which is, once again, John and I have spoken about the power of creators and how they all do the same thing, basically. So they mostly shopping from the same list, so that the same official favorites were supported by galleries, art magazines, and funding bodies. Now, this is still happening.
Of course it's still happening.
Safety in numbers was the watchword of the arts bureaucrats, and the results speak for themselves. So it's a very good example of what shouldn't happen and what does happen and how it becomes actually very tediously boring in the long term.
Yes.
That there's no courage in their choices. And he's saying that there were so many other good artists of the 90s who were just invisible at the moment because they've all been, it's been sort of smothered by what the creators...
By the political bias that's current at the time.
Well, it's not even a political bias, it's more of an aesthetic bias, yep. Which is the safety of the creator saying, okay, well, I've got to, they're basically a public servant, I've got to do something which is going to be, everyone's going to agree with. They cannot do... what they
That's
want.
That's the point, except, actually, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. Except for David Walsh, okay? Now, yep. This is the thing about Mona, is that he can do exactly what he wants when he wants.
Yes, that's right. Well, so there's freedom in that economic detachment,
his freedom in his winnings from gambling.
Well, that's right. So he isn't constrained by the responsibility of investment, which just about everybody else is. Yep. And interestingly, actually, I meant to mention it a little earlier when we were up at Kyneton to see Cameron Robbins' exhibition. And of course Cameron was the first Australian artist to be given a large feature at Mona Gallery. He mentioned that he's actually in the process of creating a permanent installation there at Mona, working with David Walsh at the moment.
Yeah, well, good for him. I mean, I found his show relatively interesting.
It was little tiny taste, really, and I think, of what he does.
It's always difficult to mix art with clothes and pottery. And,
yes.
It's sort of very inclusive. I respect the fact that he could do that, but it didn't really make his art look any more interesting somehow.
No, definitely to see it on the scale that it was at Field Lines at Mona was sensational. I think it'll be interesting perhaps at Mars too, because it'll be a larger collection.
Where's Mars?
It's sort of at the back of Paran. I can't actually remember the address of it now, but it's quite a significant gallery. They have a lot of contemporary Australian artists there. So we will definitely have a little bit of a look into who they are, perhaps, and that exhibition when it's coming up.
Okay, so there's just one last thing I want to mention, which is the I read yesterday. Apparently, Australian government gives $4 billion in foreign aid, and that Australians themselves spend $12 billion on pet food.
Now, I saw a mention of that in the paper the other day
And they spend $14 billion on alcohol. So at least they spend more on alcohol than on pet food. But it's...
But less on foreign aid.
$4 billion, the third of it.
Well, that's good. A very telling statistic, isn't it, really?
It is. We love our dogs.
Well, yes, we do love our dogs. So
actually, there were two dogs at the Kyneton Stockhouse.
Yes, they were almost like horses.
Yeah, they were beautiful animals. All right.
That's it.
Oh,
we've got stacks of time then, if that's the case. So I think one of the things that I did want to talk about, and we mentioned it earlier before we went on air, is another Fringe show. So there's so much happening on at the Fringe at the moment. It's all over everywhere. There's hundreds and hundreds of shows.
Yes. So Janelle is a first-generation Blasian Australian. She's a one-woman powerhouse, storytelling through performance art. And this show is going to be called...
It's Frankganistan.
No, that's...
There's two.
There's one which is the Revolveration.
Yes, erotic bedtime stories for adults.
Which is in the Passion... where is it?
It's a Passionata. It's a
The Passion Fruits Sensuality Shop.
Yes.
Which is in Bridge Road. And she's going to be telling stories, erotic stories.
Well, in fact, actually, she's directing a series of them, I think. But there's a whole series of different storytellers who are going to be telling erotic stories at this particular venue. It's called Revolution. It's on at the. It's part of the Fringe Festival.
Yeah, and she talks about culinary lingus and shibari, liquid ceremony, BDSM, corroboree, burlesque, asexual comedy, etc., etc.
etc., etc. So that sounds like a pretty wild show. Mm. We'll put a link, of course, to that on our Facebook page. But that she's directed that, and that's a series of stories that other people are telling. But the other thing is that she's was a Frankston local, and she has another show called Frankganistan, which I think is on. It's only a couple of nights actually.
Thursday the 21st of September, Friday the 22nd, Saturday the 23rd.
Yep, and that's about our very own lovely, lovely local city. And what's the strapline on it? Because you've got the thing there. It's something like "Even Bogans Do Good Art Too," which sounds
Bogans Do Good Art.
Yeah. Yes. So we had hoped that we might be able to talk to her, and in fact, we'd planned to do it next week, and then realised the dates were really, wrong. But we might actually get a chance to talk to her in retrospect, actually, about creating the show and so on. But I recommend go on to the Fringe Festival website and look that up. Of course, I'll do another link on our Facebook page. So I think that now it may be time for the news. Hark. Hark, indeed. Yeah, that's right. Of course, it's Melbourne Fringe time and there are so many things on. Today we spoke with Leon Huxtable about his show, Talk Show With Myself, which is on at the Hare Hole on the 25th. There's also Mansplaining too, Alice Tovey. We had a chat with her about her show, which seems to be doing incredibly well. Revaluation, of course, we just were talking about that. And Frankganistan are also part of it. There are just so many things. There's hundreds of shows. It's all over Melbourne. Go along to the website and trawl through. You will find something without a doubt.
Melbourne Festival, 4th of 22nd October, Feast for Your Imagination. This year's program of events that move freely across art forms, fusions of theatre, music, dance, circus and film.
There's also, I know we keep going on about performance arts because that's a bit my bent, of course, but there are so many other things that Fringe are bringing. There's apparently a virtual reality cinema, which had packed out sessions last season. I think it's back for its second time, bigger and bolder. It's featuring 20 virtual reality film works and international and local works, and that's from the 16th to the 1st of October. That's just another part of Fringe. They've also got a furniture exhibition, which is part, which I think is on at the Abbotsford
Convent,
at the Abbotsford Convent as well. So it really is a great time to see what young and emerging and established artists are experimenting with at the moment.
So McCulloch and McCulloch,
yes,
has a new show from Nature.
Yep,
Spring Salon Exhibition, September the 23rd to November the 12th. Spring Salon Exhibition at Whistlewood. Where's that?
That's in Tux Road.
Okay,
that's
right.
That's the place. Yes, we you should come along with that. This time, yes.
Opening with the Creators Floor Talk on Saturday, September the 23rd, the exhibition features exciting new works from our recent northern trips, including paintings, barks and carvings from Arnhem Land, the Pilbara, the Kimberley, the APY lands and the central, eastern and western deserts. We're also delighted to be showing a range of new works by leading contemporary FNQ artist.
That's Far North Queensland, Mark.
Oh, I see.
Yes, yes.
Sounds like something else, but anyway. Yes. Rosella Namok, Samantha Hobson, Fiona Arminio.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Cameron Robbins exhibitions on until the 8th of October at the Stockroom in Carnton. That's pretty good to have a little look at that. And also to remind you that if you happen to be flying to Brisbane today or in the next couple of days, that you can get to see that new Tom Roberts painting, which is called
Rejected, which it was, of course.
Yes, of course, it's been rejected for a very long time, and that's at the Philip Bacon Galleries in Arthur Street in Fortitude Valley. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, so tune in earlier next week. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. If you visit or like our Facebook page, you'll find links to some of the things we've been talking about. Ooh! And also get a reminder about what and when and who is coming up in the next show. You can find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. So join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday to hear the repeat on Wednesdays at 12, or listen to the podcasts. Have a lovely Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art,
but we know that the Valdosta is now called the Falls of Schopenhauer.
John's going to be spewing.